Just a warning before we start, this episode contains descriptions of sexual assault, with a voice actor reading out anonymous testimony of real-life stories throughout. In Australia, support for sexual assault survivors is available at 1-800-RESPECT. I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Well, you know, we all had experiences that, you know, we'd either told each other about or we witnessed.
In mid-February, Chanel Contos did a poll on social media asking whether any of her friends had been raped or sexually assaulted.
And it just kind of shifted from us thinking like, oh, that person's like a dickhead, to thinking like, oh wait, no, that's a criminal offence and I shouldn't feel guilty that I did that because I didn't actually do that, it was done to me.
This poll turned into a petition and then a movement, with tens of thousands of people calling for better sex education in Australian schools. Education that prioritises the issue of consent. Today, ending rape culture in Australian schools. It's Thursday, the 11th of March.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, Chanel, I'm all right. How are you feeling?
Good, thank you.
What time is it there right now?
It's not that late. It's actually only 9:30.
It's still pretty late to be doing media interviews, but yeah, I appreciate it.
I've been doing them till like 2 a.m., so I'm used to it.
Oof, okay, let's get going.
Yeah.
So I'll start with just a little bit about yourself. Tell me your name, age, anything about yourself you would like to share.
So my name's Chanel. I am 23 years old. I moved to London at the end of 2020 to start a master's in gender education and international development. And yeah, I'm very clearly passionate about the course.
Can you tell me a little bit about where you grew up?
Yeah, so I grew up in Sydney's eastern suburbs. I had an insanely privileged upbringing. Did my high school years at Kambala. My high school was a single-sex girls' school, and most of the boys I hung out with on the weekend were also private school, single-sex high school boys.
When you're in high school, what was sex education like? When did you first hear the word consent?
First time I knew what consent was, I was in year 10. And like I said, I had a really privileged upbringing. I went to, you know, one of the best schools in Sydney. And my school did consent education outside of the curriculum. So it wasn't part of the curriculum, but because it was a private school, it had the flexibility. Mm. And they brought in someone who was an ex-policeman to come talk to us and teach us what consent was. And it was a very, very memorable day. It was a one-day event. I remember a lot of the things that I was taught that day, and it definitely had a large focus on sexual assault and the fact that it was a criminal offence. And yeah, that was the same day that I realised that I had been sexually assaulted, and lots of my friends realised we had been sexually assaulted.
When you say you realised that you had been sexually assaulted and your friends had as well, I mean, what were those conversations like when you had that realisation?
Well, you know, we all had experiences that, you know, we'd either told each other about or we witnessed happen to each other, or, you know, we all went to parties together, we're all best friends, like we knew what was going on. It just kind of, we knew that the event happened, and it just kind of shifted from us thinking like, oh, that person's like a dickhead, to thinking like, oh wait, no, that's a criminal offence and I shouldn't feel guilty that I did that because I didn't actually do that, it was done to me.
Is there a specific example that you feel comfy talking about, like the types of things that, you know, boys at parties were doing?
Yeah, so the types of things, you know, for example, like boys pushing our heads down to, you know, perform oral sex on them. Lots of the times it was things that were like jokes. So it was like very public when a girl was passed out. You know, I've seen boys put their dicks in my friends' mouths when they're passed out. I've seen people, like, one time I actually thought about this the other day. I was having like very much consensual sex with my boyfriend at the time. I was a bit older at this point. And, you know, someone came into the room and saw us and like screamed out. being like, oh, like, this is happening, whatever. And, you know, like, five boys ran in the room and did, like, stacks on top of, yeah, horrible. You know, that's that's rape culture, that's objectification of women, that's just immaturity, it's horrible. You know, things like this happening all the time, walking into friends being passed out in a room and people doing things to them. Yeah, endless stories.
So you have this enormous realization in year 10 and you talk about it with your friends. What's happened since then? How have you been thinking about this issue?
As I got older, as I said at this time, I was so happy to open up to this experience to my friends and things like that, my immediate friend group. But as I got older, the more open I would be about it, you know, like the more I would, talk about it more and more. And then, about a year ago now in 2020, I was with some friends. We all went to different private schools around Sydney. But we're in the same extended social group and, you know, had been semi-friends when we were younger and a lot closer now. And we kind of just started sharing rape stories with each other, and it became apparent very quickly that we just had unlimited of either our own or, our close friends. And in that conversation, I was told that the same boy who sexually assaulted me sexually assaulted one of my friends a year later and pretty much did the exact same thing. Yeah, and...
I'm sorry.
But it was just... Like, I remember going to bed that night and, like, shaking, and all I was thinking was, if I had known that it was sexual assault when it happened to me, I would have stopped it. I would have either, you know, reported him to his school, to the police, to his parents, even just told him that that behaviour is not okay, because I don't think he knew that behaviour is not okay. I would have done one of those things, and as a result, then it wouldn't have happened to my friend. And I just got so angry, and then, just started with an Instagram poll and... posted the Instagram poll after we had settled down a little bit. And yeah, it started from that.
Tell me about this Instagram poll. What did it ask?
The question was, have you or has anyone close to you ever been sexually assaulted by someone who went to a single sex boys' school in Sydney? Which got over, like, I think 500 responses or something saying yes, by the way. And that was just my immediate Instagram following at the time.
Oh, that is... a lot of people just in your friend circle. What did you do when you found that out?
Yeah, so what happened was originally I was posting them on my Instagram story as they came through, and then I got so many that I couldn't keep up with. And then so I started a Google Doc, and then again I was getting so many that I couldn't manually do it. So I started a Google Form, which would store the data, and then I could do it when I had time. And I still haven't even been able to catch up to all the ones in the Google form. And then since then I've launched a website so that it goes through the website and goes straight to the back end. But the problem is, before I publish anything publicly, I have to read it and check that no one is named, because I want my whole movement to be about schools being named and, you know, calling out the education system. And, you know, I'm sure the perpetrators who read this know that it's about them. But it's, I think that it would be absolute chaos and mayhem, and Australia would literally, like, can't even imagine what would happen to Australia if people started actually pointing fingers at individuals. Because I think if people realised how many people they know who have committed sexual assault that are in their day-to-day lives, it would be chaos.
He was my boyfriend for 11 months. I told him I didn't want to have sex, and we hadn't, but we had done everything else. I was a virgin. He knew how important it was for me, as we had spoken about it at length. He proceeded to do it in the shower, and I woke lying on the shower floor, realizing what had happened. I stayed with him for 2 months, trying to fix it, but I felt so broken, and sometimes I still do.
I started going through the testimonies because, you know, obviously you've got to read what's going on.
Lucy Clark is the features editor at Guardian Australia.
I hardly knew him, had never kissed him, nor had any desire to. I shut the door, but a few seconds later he barged in again and blocked the door behind him. Being so young, I wasn't educated at all at that point about consent.
It's difficult reading. I wanted to see what sort of themes emerged, and I could see that there was a lot of repetition in the stories.
I'm in my early 20s now, but have only just realised that I was actually sexually assaulted.
What did you think when you read this story and started looking into it?
Look, I think like, you know, many people, I just felt this why question, like why are we still dealing with these issues after 40 or more years of activism? You know, we're still having the same conversations about girls' bodies, and it's just so deeply perplexing. And I just wanted to find out what's going wrong. I mean, what it's going wrong for boys as well, obviously. So my urge was to talk to as many experts as I could to find out about what's going on.
What were the themes that you found?
Look, there were probably about half a dozen, but just to deal with a few of them here. In particular, I think it's important to focus on gender norms and gender identity and how they affect relationships. Lack of accountability is a really big one, and also the lack of consent training and education, and basically girls really not knowing what that is and boys not knowing what that is.
Let's start with that first one, kind of gender and relationships. Why is that important? What did you learn about that?
One of the things I read time and time again in these testimonies was, I thought he was my friend. He was my best friend. I felt safe with him. I thought it was safe to go with him here. I thought it was okay to share a bed with him after a party because he was my friend.
All of a sudden, I start to feel super drunk and I started to fade in and out of consciousness. My best guy friend was completely sober. My next memories are of him taking me out onto the middle of the street where he proceeded to sexually assault me while I was dipping in and out of consciousness.
And so there was a lot of hurt and confusion around what they thought was X type of relationship but became something else with an assault. And this was actually really, it was a really emotional part of it because it's something that happens with adolescents and is hard to get to the bottom of.
What did the experts tell you about what's behind this? Why a young man would violate what the women see as a friendship that they've formed?
So I spoke to Michael Salter, who's a professor in criminology at the University of New South Wales, and he's an expert in masculinity. And he zeroed right in on this sort of age group between primary school and high school where something happens in the development of young boys. And they're starting to become militant about masculinity, as he put it. And, you know, new peer structures get established and they become very gender segregated and boys become rewarded for acting in a certain way or they become punished for reacting in a certain way. And all of that becomes much stronger than just about anything. It becomes stronger than seeing girls as humans or as just platonic friends.
So it kind of drives a bit of misogyny and some formation of what sounds like really problematic values.
Exactly. I spoke to Victoria Rawlings, who's a researcher in gender, sexuality and education. She's at the University of Sydney. And, you know, she said that this is a time when masculinity can be seen as successful when it's paired with a kind of misogyny. You know, things like rating girls' appearances or sexual performances in chat groups. You know, they take and they share non-consensual images of girls. They dare friends to perform sexual acts with particular girls and sometimes without consent. And, you know, this is what she said is, you know, quite a big part of behaving like what she says was a successful male.
It's really hard for me to hear that list being read out, really. I've been in environments where boys would sit in the park and hold up signs rating the attractiveness of girls as they walk past when I was a teenager. It's so common.
Yeah, it's so common. It's been common for a long time. I mean, hello, we've got the biggest social network in the world with almost 3 billion users was basically created by two guys rating the appearances of women. So, you know, is it any wonder?
You mentioned the word masculinity a few times. Is all of this down to a problem that we have heard a lot about, toxic masculinity?
Yeah, I mean, we've been hearing a lot about toxic masculinity for a long time. And, you know, there's often this excuse about that's just what boys are like, or boys will be boys. This is something that we have to constantly challenge. And, you know, we have to have these critical conversations about gender norms and, you know, strict gender stereotypes about how boys have got to be and how girls have got to be. We've got to loosen those restraints.
Yeah, Chanel did mention this quite a bit, and that whilst toxic masculinity is an issue everywhere, she saw it firsthand and kind of supercharged in this privileged environment that she grew up in.
But the real crux of it, I think, this toxic masculinity, I think single-sex boys' schools breed and reproduce toxic masculinity. So toxic masculinity is basically means that society gives men power through three main things. One, they're like physical powering, whether that's like whether they get in fights or their athletic skills, things like that. Number two, wealth. And then number three, you know, sexual conquest. And I'm saying conquest in a negative way because that's the way it is perceived by these men. They are seen as conquest. It's not seen as mutual activity. Not all men participate in toxic masculinity, but toxic masculinity affects all men, and because so many do, and it makes them the people in society who have higher status, it becomes the dominating discourse.
Next, how justice and education are key to ending rape culture. So I want to talk about the second theme that you spoke about, accountability and justice. What kind of stories did you read about on those themes?
The thing about accountability is that on the whole, there is barely any accountability. And a lot of girls talked about not reporting it. I never told anyone.
Are there any particular stories that stood out to you about this lack of justice?
There was just one line, and I've got goosebumps thinking about it because there are all these stories that go on and, you know, are quite detailed. And this one young woman just had this one line testimony.
He raped me twice and they let him get away with it. What more do you need to know?
And that was it. I just thought it's so bleak and so true. So there are a couple of things going on here. There's the shame that they are made to feel, and then there's the overwhelming idea that nothing will happen and that they'll get away with it, because that's basically what happens in our justice system. You know, very few sexual assaults and rapes are reported. Very few make it to a charge, and even fewer make it to a conviction. So, you know, the statistics on this crime is eminently discouraging in terms of wanting to report or seek justice.
Did any of the experts you spoke to have any insight into this lack of accountability and why it is so prevalent?
Well, it's the air that we breathe, isn't it? I mean, it's everywhere. It goes, you know, at the moment, especially, it seems like it's all around us. And, you know, Michael Salter, he said questions of accountability go right to the top. And, you know, he said that what we're seeing around the allegations of Brittany Higgins and what's going on in Parliament at the moment, they're precisely the same dynamics writ large across many institutions and workplaces. And that includes those involving children, like schools. And, you know, this is what he sees. They're the unwritten rules of sexual violence.
It is really difficult, though. Some of these stories are about children. It's hard to figure out what role the criminal justice system should play in this really complex issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I spoke to another expert, Bianca Philiborne, and she is a lecturer in criminology in sexual violence at the University of Melbourne. And she said, you know, with dealing with kids, school kids, a criminal justice response isn't always appropriate because, you know, we are dealing with young kids and that we need to look at, you know, it comes back to education and we need to look at ways that deal with this culture in a way that's not overly punitive. And she was suggesting things like, you know, greater development in areas like restorative justice, educational approaches, you know, and holding young kids to account in a different way that doesn't involve a criminal response.
So the last thing that you mentioned is about consent. How often was that mentioned in these testimonies, this issue of consent?
In everyone. You know, they don't know. They did not consent to anything that they wrote about in these testimonies.
He was my ex-boyfriend. We were both 16 and I got so drunk that I could hardly walk or talk. He carried me into his bed and I remember crying while he had sex with me, but not being able to tell him to stop. We had had consensual sex before, so I felt like I didn't have a reason to say no.
So many of them, and this was a really horrifying thing to me, was that so many of the testimonies said, I didn't realise that I was assaulted at the time. Mm. It's only now reading these other testimonies that I realise that it was rape. It's clearly, you know, clearly education around consent is inadequate. Every single expert I spoke to said that education around consent has to start much, much earlier and in an age-appropriate way with, you know, with kids in early childhood. And it must be mandatory in every single school in Australia.
I mean, this does bring us to Chanel's petition and the point of that petition, right? She believes that a lot of this can be solved by better sex education and earlier discussions around consent. Do you know how much consent training kids do get in Australian schools?
Look, it's very uneven because of, you know, state-to-state differences in education departments. Mm. We do know that Victoria has respectful relationships programs starting from year seven, and that deals with consent. I know that sex education in Queensland state schools is not compulsory.
Mm.
It's just really, really uneven around Australia. And, you know, we had a furor around safe schools a few years ago, which has led to some reluctance about, you know, academics getting caught up in media furors about education in gender and identity.
I mean, you saw the media, the Murdoch media empire kind of go in on this because of the issues with gender that they saw in this campaign.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it was actually a program that was designed to loosen up ideas about strict masculinity and strict femininity. Mm. And, you know, Kerry Robinson, who I spoke to, said this is all caught up in the same issue. I mean, it is a really complex issue and there are a lot of moving parts, but what we have to do is remove the embarrassment around talking about sex and gender and identity. And it's going to continue being passed from generation to generation if we don't deal with the taboo of it.
Even this level of conversation is so much further than where it was when I was in school only about 10 years ago. I don't think consent was even mentioned. And if it was, I definitely didn't remember it. We had a class where someone was brought in to teach us self-defense for the attacker that's going to come at us in a car park. Like, I feel like that's the thing that stands out to me about how to prevent assault.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, for so long, sex education has been about girls protecting their purity and boys restraining their animal instincts, you know. I mean, it's medieval and completely and absolutely unrelated to reality. There are a lot of barriers here to adequate sex education. Religion is a problem. I think single-sex schools are a problem. You know, there are just so many aspects of the culture that we're in that, you know, are a barrier to actually having free and easy conversations about these things.
So if the aim of this petition was successful, I imagine it's many years down the track, that there is earlier, better and more and mandatory consent education in schools around Australia. Can you see that really shifting this conversation in a strong way? Do you think that it would change the picture for young women?
Yes, I do. But I think it's absolutely crucial that school systems really look at baking this sort of education into the curriculum, because having one lecture a year from a retired detective who says this is rape, this is sexual assault, so you can tick a box and say we've done consent, it's not nearly enough. It has to be part of the curriculum.
As you mentioned, that there's such strong forces at play, these social norms, these boys kind of forming their identity at a crucial age, a one-off conversation, I cannot imagine would shift that.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, it has to be in schools as well as homes, and parents have to be having these conversations as well from much younger ages. And my inbox after writing that feature is absolutely overloaded with parents saying, what do I do? And, you know, the answer is just talk from a very young age, look for guidance for age-appropriate conversations, and then you've got to build on these conversations, as Kerry Robinson said, you know, the one talk that everyone talks about. Have you had the talk? Have you spoken to your kids? You know, have you done the talk? It's not enough. They have to be, you know, this conversation has to build in sophistication over many years, and, you know, and add to this sort of idea of openly discussing gender and identity and sexuality.
Obviously, this is a problem in broader society. We see stories of assault allegations and bad cultures for women everywhere, basically. Would changing the culture in schools change the culture elsewhere?
100%. I mean, you know, schools where you learn behaviours, schools where you learn your morals, you learn, you know, parents think that parents grow us up, but it's really our friends who grow us up. And how many hours do we spend with our friends every day? 8 hours, Monday to Friday. I mean, that's where people are made. That's where environments are made, morals are made. And the other thing about the whole private school wealth thing, I don't want to make this about private schools. It is a whole, every school in Australia has these issues, but these, like, people who grow up in these environments, because they're so privileged, they go into positions of power. And, you know, that's, you know, I'm self-aware, it's me included. I mean, I probably wouldn't have the opportunity to be able to do what I'm doing right now if I didn't have the education to get into uni and then get into my master's and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, you end up in positions of power. And if this was your learned behavior, you're going to use your position of power to continue that to be the norm down through society. And then it's just another cycle. But schools can be the catalyst for change.
In the past week, in response to Chanel's petition, the heads of hundreds of private schools across New South Wales were briefed by the boss of the Police Sex Crime Squad. And on Monday, Chanel launched another online petition, this time aimed at the New South Wales Parliament, calling for earlier and holistic consent education in the New South Wales curriculum and urgent reform to require sexual consent to be defined as enthusiastic consent under New South Wales law. You can find that by searching for current open e-petitions on the Parliament of New South Wales website. If this episode has raised any issues for you, support for sexual assault survivors is available at 1-800-RESPECT. For children, young people and their families, support can also be found on the Kids Helpline at 1-800-55-1800. And adult survivors of child sexual abuse can contact the Blue Knot Foundation on 1-300-657-380. That's it for today. Thanks to Chanel and Lucy for their time. Do go and read Lucy's piece where she breaks down these issues and her conversations with the experts. It's called The Trouble with Boys, and you can find it at theguardian.com. Plus, we've linked it on the full story page. This episode was produced by Ellen Lee Beater, Joe Koning, and Marnie Cordell. Our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. Okay, catch you tomorrow.